What's the secret behind passionate teams? Why are there only a few out there and how can we get more of them? If you've asked yourself these questions, then this podcast is for you. We are talking with national and international experts about passionate teams to answer these questions. This is our passion. This is what we are burning for. Welcome to the Passionate Teams Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Passionate Teams Podcast. Again, I will talking to somebody who's quite far away from me at the moment. And for us, it would be a 12-hour flight to get to Santa Barbara, where Heidi is sitting. So, hello, Heidi.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've got my coffee. I'm all ready to roll.
Yeah, it's really early still in Santa Barbara, right?
Yeah, it is.
6 o'clock, something like that, right?
I like getting an early start, so this works for me.
Okay, that's perfect. So thank you for spending the time today in this podcast. I'm really happy that you are here. Maybe you can just introduce yourself in a few words.
Sure. My name is Heidi Helfand. I am the author of a book called Dynamic Reteaming, The Art and Wisdom of Changing Teams. And I live in Santa Barbara, California, and I work at a company called Procore Technologies, and we build software for the construction industry. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Sounds really interesting. And as you already said, you wrote this interesting book about dynamic reteaming, and this is exactly the topic of this podcast, teams. And just to start this off, I would like to ask you, how would you define a passionate team?
Yeah, a passionate team to me is a team that's comprised of people that are motivated. They're very interested, intrigued, and driven to do the work of the team. There's something about it that they feel like they're making an impact, and they know it. And so they strive to come up with unique solutions to achieve the goals that they have from their customers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I think it definitely ties to impact.
Okay. And now that you have a passionate team, if I would ask people around the world still what they would say, if you have a really cool passionate team, right? A winning team, then never touch a winning team, right? And what you're talking about in your book is something completely the opposite, right?
More or less, but there could be some similarities. We will see.
Okay. So what does it take to build such a team? What do you think?
What does it take to build a passionate team? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think to build a passionate team, I think there definitely has to be an element. Well, there has to be a few things. You need to have people that are motivated. So people that ideally, you know, maybe they choose to be on that team. You know, I think that if people have the freedom to choose their teams, maybe there's a greater chance that the teams will have chemistry, that the people will want to work together. Maybe the people choose to work together. I think giving choice in team is something that it's almost like risk management for team chemistry if people have choice. Mm-hmm. So I think that, the people have to want to be there on the team. If I'm forced to join a team and there are people on that team who I'd rather not work with, I think it will impact how I show up on that team. Maybe I'm not excited to come to work each day if I'm put on a team and I don't want to be on that team. I mean, it could be that somebody else assigns me to the team and I'm happy and excited to be there. Maybe we can get lucky. And then, you know, that would work out too. But sometimes we just don't know as managers or as the people who would put people on teams. We don't always know what the social dynamics are mm-hmm. between the different potential team members. So I guess the first thing is, I think to have a passionate team, it's nice to give the people choice. Maybe you have a this is a hypothesis. I believe you have a greater chance of success. I think the second thing would be that they're working on something compelling. For example, maybe they're interacting with customers and understanding some problems that customers have. And so then they become, they meet those customers, they become involved and they care about the problems that these customers are facing. So they band together as a team to offer up some unique solutions to see if, hey, did we solve the problem of the customer? Mm-hmm. I think that's important as well. I think they need support and an environment that's conducive to being a team. For example, you know, whether they're, let's say they're a team that's co-located, but they're sitting together, so they're co-seated. I think it's helpful to have an environment that is easy to work in, that helps them to get their jobs done. They have the equipment that they need. They have the, the office environment that doesn't get in their way. They could also be a remote team that works out the communication protocols, the communication norms that they want so that they can do their best work together. I think that's also possible. So I think basically giving people choice in their team, having compelling work that they're doing, that they're excited about. And again, I think there's an element of like problem solving, or how can we have an impact on these customers? How can we change lives? And, you know, so there's, you know, how can we kind of feel this empathy for these customers? And then also I think they need the support and the equipment and the environment so that they can do their work without, you know, too many annoying obstacles.
Yeah. So everything is there, what they need, right? There's some, maybe some smaller room where they can go in for doing some silent working where they don't want to be disturbed. And there could be maybe some bigger rooms where a team can get together doing some team meetings. And there are maybe spaces where you can easily maybe even shift your desk together to say, okay, let's have some kind of like a project space where we sit together, something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe it's not like a one size fits all solution, but the environment is available to them, and you know, they're not too restricted, like don't move your table. I mean, it's wonderful if you can configure and reconfigure your space and you have what you need. You're not annoyed by kind of the lack of, you know, a special chair or something.
Okay. And I also like the thing about choosing your team. And I think this is also what Google does, right? They, if somebody has an idea and starts a project or some new product development, then people joining him or her, if they feel this is a cool idea, and then this team is building around this person more or less, but they can also leave this team if they feel, oh, now it doesn't work for me. It's not really what I would like to do. And this is also where projects or products are, ideas are dying then in such companies, which is really cool. So how would it work? Or is it how does it work in your company? Do you have a free choice of choosing your teams?
Well, in the company that, let me tell you about a past company. I'm going to tell you about a past company because we had some very good brokering of team choice in close conjunction with managers. This was at a previous company that I was at. And it was really nice because we had a culture of having this very close relationship between the team members and the managers. And we would have one-on-one walks, and we would be walking outside here in California under eucalyptus trees. And people would have very close communication with their managers, and they would be on a team, and if they were going to change, they would work it out with their managers. And so they had kind of a choice, but brokered by thoughtful and caring managers. Mm-hmm. Also at this company, one of the things that we did was we would have hack days twice a year, and we would have these open marketplace facilitated events where people could choose the teams that they wanted to work on. And it was very motivating and exciting because the people served up the work that the teams were going to do. And then we facilitated activities where we would have a marketplace. You would go buy the work that you wanted to pose, and then people would come and kind of shop around and then self-organize to figure out the teams. And so, you know, I haven't been in an environment that had complete free choice of teams. It's been more of a continuum. And I think having the ability to work on teams, you know, some of us have experienced in special event type situations. And there are stories in my book, actually, about people choosing teams. Sandy Mamoli wrote a book called Creating Great Teams. Do you know her? She's from New Zealand.
No, I don't know her.
And I can introduce you to her. She might be an interesting guest for your podcast. And her whole book is about how you can do that and how you can engage the people to choose teams. And she tells stories from a company in New Zealand, an online marketplace called TradeMe. And so there's some stories in my book about how they had a project-based situation in which you had a large number of people and they were organized by, like, here's project A, and you'd work on a percentage of your time likely on project A, project B, and project C. But they switched to a different model and they had hundreds of people. And so she tells a story about how they held a self-selection event in which people were choosing their teams. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a valid option. People get to teams in many different ways. You were talking about a little bit ago at Google how someone would start something and other people would join the team. There's a chapter in my book, I think it's about organic team formation through prototyping. And there's a story in there about a person who started a team and then found a motivating item to work on. And he tells the story about how he gradually invited and added team members to work with him. Mm-hmm. So I think, and there's definitely a continuum of choice in team. You know, sometimes people are on teams and they don't even know who put them there. And that's at one end of the spectrum, kind of this reteaming by abstraction. Maybe you have some sort of enterprise and there's a large scale reorg going on and people are just reformed onto teams, and then the people find out where they're going to be. You know, that's at one end of the spectrum. And then at the very opposite side of the spectrum is kind of like what you're talking about. The people choose their teams. Somebody starts an idea and kind of gathers people to join a team. And then you have other places sort of in the middle, from, you know, manager brokered team assignment, to situations where managers organize events in which people choose their teams. It's a kind of a broad spectrum there.
Yeah, I agree. So what is your book about? What's the main message that you want to address with your book?
Yeah, the main message of the book is that team change is real. It's something that many of us experience day after day, week after week. So team change is inevitable. It's real. So you might as well get good at it. You know, we might hear in the software industry and in circles where we talk about agile software development, other things, that no, the best teams are the ones that don't change. They stay the same. But for many of us, especially for those of us who have been part of startups, that have grown and become very successful. I've been a member of three very successful startups, and team changes is the norm. So having an agenda where you're trying to keep everything the same kind of goes counter to some of the business objectives that we may have. I was at the first startup, I was employee number 15. I was there for 8 years. I left when there were about 700 people. We invented GoToMeeting and GoToWebinars on the original development team for those products. And, you know, it's inevitable that if you're at a startup that is successful and that is growing, your teams are going to change. Second startup, which was AppFolio, I was there for 9 years. I was the 10th employee, you know, again in engineering. And I left after 9 years when they had reached 650 people. So in our R&D organization, I was present from one team to about 30 teams. And we grew and changed as the norm. And so you can get good at this kind of situation. I'm at, you know, another startup now. I'm later. It were a pre-IPO company called Procore Technologies. I joined when there were 850 people. We just hit 1,000 people. And the organization is growing, changing, and morphing based on hiring and based on other needs. And so, you know, you can get good at being in a situation where you're in a fast-moving, fast-growing company. So the point of the book is, you know, I share stories from the field as a practitioner in the software industry. It's closing on it's almost 20 years now of being in high growth, fast changing situations. So I share kind of first person practitioner stories about this. But then I also thought, you know, why are these people preaching stable teams everywhere and the best teams are the ones that don't change? Is it just us? Like, is it something about Santa Barbara? Well, no, you know, I started interviewing people all over the world. I've got about 30 hours of interviews now. I've been working on the book for a year. And so I share different practitioner stories about how teams change and how they have changed in the wild. If I've heard a similar story, if I've heard about the same type of team change three or more times, I call it a pattern. And so the book is organized into different patterns. So there's reteaming and like, why do teams change? You know, for company growth is one, because new work emerges is another kind of category of patterns, because people need and want to change. They want to learn something new or they are seeking fulfillment. It's another category of why teams change, you know, reteaming because of the code. You know, maybe there's like a short-term challenge that we're facing in the code that we want to address by having a short-term team that forms and diffuses. You know, maybe we have performance issues, for example. That's a common one.
Like a small task force, something like that.
Like a little task force. I think people have called them tiger teams in the past. You know, there's also anti-patterns and as well that I go over in the book. So then the final section of the book is on practices, like things you can do to make it easier when your teams change according to some of these different reasons. So team change is real. We might as well get good at it and acknowledge it. So, you know, the book is about sharing that point and, you know, sharing practitioner stories. I think that those of us that are in the trenches, that are working day to day, that are experiencing some of this stuff, have voices that need to be heard. So this is not a book with ivory tower stories that take place about teams outside an R&D organization. You know, you'll get some of that, you know, that we can access. You know, I'm not telling stories about fast-changing hospitals that have nothing to do with research and development. Those are interesting stories, but they're just not, it doesn't have parity with what some of us are trying to do in software. So there are lots.
So what you also do, I think you challenge also the Tuckman model, right? Where he has these, I think, five phases a team goes through, more or less. Mm-hmm. I think what I read about you was also what Tuckman misses was the status of stagnation, right?
Yeah.
Where a team is stable over a longer period of time, and maybe there is also not that much diversity in thoughts and so on and so on. and then you get some kind of a stagnation, right, in a team.
Yeah, I think that's really kind of a forgotten step of that model. And, you know, what is it? Forming, storming, norming, performing. And, you know, sometimes I think, yeah, if a team is together too long, they could feel like they're stagnating. Maybe there's not enough diversity of thought, as you're saying. You could try to change it up and bring in different work or start a book club or something. But sometimes people just need to work with others. You know, you go to a convention, and imagine you go to a convention that's a week long and you have to stay in one session all week. You'd miss out on so much learning from all the different mm-hmm. people. And I think, especially in environments where we don't have so much choice, we might feel trapped on a team. And so I think we can, you know, notice that, and we can help people if we enable people to try something new or to change teams. Maybe we extend their life at the company. And why wouldn't we want to keep good people, you know, by enabling them to change their teams, change what they're working on, or maybe even change their roles? You know, at Procore, where I'm at, this company has such a wonderful growth mindset about people. I'm really, really struck by it. And there's some stories. There's a story in the book about a gentleman who started out in a quality assurance type role, and it recounts the story of how he became a software engineer and the things that he did to change his role. And I'm a former teacher. I'm trained at a master's in teaching English, and just that idea that, you know, we're not done. We can grow and change. Even when we get to our job, we want to keep learning, and we can see beyond our roles and grow and change. And that's one kind of delightful thing I think about working at Procore, is that they just, you know, we focus on a lot on learning and development, and you can get to a different role. So I think that's really cool.
And I think adding new team members to a team is also like, when you think in a metaphor, it's like a drop coming into a sea, and then just these little waves that are spreading down the team. There's now some new movements, some new learnings, some new impacts, new ideas that are coming into a team, right?
Yeah.
Maybe before it was maybe like more like a stable sea, and then there comes this new team member and tuck, and you get some new impulses in the team, right?
Yeah.
Whereas definitely. I think when you change too much, it's more like raining in the end, and then you get too much things maybe going on, and this could also be maybe a bad thing in the end.
Yeah.
But I think if you only change something, single things, only maybe one person over time, can bring a lot of interesting effects.
You know, and I think it's a personal preference, and it's a company preference. Like, there, you know, I've been at companies before that, you know, we have very deliberate goals to grow, and we want to grow fast, and we want to get to a certain size, and we want to work on all this different stuff in parallel. And it's a business decision. So the hiring is really fast, and there's a higher rate of change in the teams. And, you know, a lot of the times we coach and we prime the people for this, because this is going to happen. And especially if you're hiring in someone new into a situation like this, this should not be a surprise to them. After they get there, you really want parity in your hiring. So it can be, you know, a business decision. It could also be a business decision to not hire, or to, you know, unfortunately, you know, businesses go through periods sometimes, depending on the situation, where they're laying people off. That's another business situation. It's kind of like the opposite, and definitely does not feel the same. I've been in both situations. So it's a business decision, how the rate at which you grow. It's kind of like stepping on a gas pedal, you know, fast or slow. But then it's also a personal choice. I think, just like our opinions about change in general, I might be a person that wants more change, or maybe I might be a person that prefers more stability and less change, and I think that's valid. And, you know, getting back to one of your, you know, very initial thoughts in the beginning of this podcast, is I think, you know, if I'm on a squad, if I'm on a team, and it's amazing, and the chemistry is right, maybe this is a passionate team, we feel like, you know, we're working on a compelling problem, it's an enjoyable experience, we're all learning, the environment is set, we feel like we're making an impact, and the chemistry is just there. It's a special situation, and sometimes it's even hard to explain why this team is so amazing and so special. And in those types of situations where we're really rocking it and we're delivering value continuously to our customers, we know we're making a difference. Well, you might not want to change that team, and it's valid to not change it. So I'm not saying bust up all your teams. I'm not saying dynamically change all your teams as fast as you can. What I am saying is that, you know, reteaming, the ability to change, is an option that I think is left out of many of the discussions in software development best practices. It should be on the table for many reasons that are valid and sometimes invalid. Team change is going to happen, so you might as well get good at it. And the field of Agile, you know, people are more apt to change requirements or more apt to change those more frequently, for example. But changing teams have been like that one thing that people say, oh, leave that constant. But, you know, it might not be best for the humans that are present. So I think we should have an open mind about how we form our teams, how we change our teams. And it only takes one person to have a new team. You know, these teams, you know, I'm biased from CRRglobal.com and trained as an organizational relationship systems coach, ORSC. And, you know, one of the beliefs that come from that community is that, you know, teams are systems. It only takes one person, or if you add a new person to a team or you keep that team the same and remove one person, it only takes the addition or removal of one person to have a new team system. The people that are present there, their interactions, the vibe together is different. So, you know, many of us experience that all the time. We hire in a new person, they join a team, that's a new team. Or somebody leaves a team, maybe they leave our team to go to another team within the company, or they leave the company, and then that remaining team is different. And I think if that person who is joining or leaving has a very strong personality, we might notice it more blatantly. And so it's something to notice, and we want to integrate that new person, or we want to handle the loss of the person if they leave the team. That team is different. And so, you know, reteaming is more common than we might think.
Yeah, but maybe sometimes maybe some people forget that this is a possibility, right? If a team is maybe like a dead horse, you can add Scrum, you can add whatever different coaching on this team, so this horse won't get up and start running again. It's just the team is maybe dead.
Yeah.
And then it's maybe a good idea to say, come on, let's get some new energy into the team by removing somebody or by adding somebody or by maybe just create a completely new team and set them on this topic, whatever. But this is why I also started this podcast, is I think before you try to solve something around a team because something's not working, maybe look into the team and find out what is missing for them. Maybe you can help them to get passionate again by whatever, adding a clear vision that they have a compelling goal, like what you said earlier, because this is important for a team, or by giving them the freedom to choose maybe where they would like to work, or by giving them the freedom to take decisions, maybe even because maybe they are just not moving because they are not really able to take decisions at all, right?
Yeah,
and I think it's a good thing to think about more about teams and people and less about processes and tools in the end, right?
Yeah, I fully agree. I think you can get curious and you can start, you know, engaging with the team in different experiments. You know, maybe like you said, it's a different type of work, and maybe that helps kind of revive the energy, you know, or maybe it is they need a change, you know. So I think the ability to change the team should just be an option to consider. You know, maybe they need to go visit customers regularly. Maybe that is the thing that helps them regain their enthusiasm. There's many different things that you could try. And I think getting with the team, getting curious, coaching the team, and helping them really even serve up potential things to try could be helpful. I think if you have widespread stagnation or other things, you know, maybe you could try something a little bit more, you know, see if they're willing to try something a little bit more extreme. Rachel Davies, I interviewed her in the book. She was working at a company called Unruly in London, and they would send surveys periodically, to team members just to see, you know, how are they doing? Are they up for it? Do they think they might want to change teams? And they would investigate it from that angle. And, you know, then they would learn different things. You know, other people might be more open about it. And not that that isn't open, but that works in that environment. I mean, you know, you can talk about it directly in retrospectives. I mean, Hunter Industries down in Southern California, I interviewed Chris Lucian and Jason Kearney. So their stories in there. They come from the mob programming background, which they do at Hunter. And they talk about, they have a very strong retrospectives culture, which they had a lot of, a lot more dynamic kind of reteaming between their mobs. And then they reflected in retrospectives and thought, you know what, this is a little too fast for us. We need to slow this down. And they came up with a practice that enables them to, the team members can find each other and trade places and then work it out between themselves or with helpful kind of mentors. And then they tell the managers later after they've changed their team. So they worked out a different way to do it. So I think they did that through the structure of having a retrospective where you could talk about it. So I think through surveys, through retrospectives, through, you know, just talking to people, we can help devise ways that, hey, maybe we can, you know, maybe these teams need a shift and how can we help them get there? So I think
and as you just mentioned, retrospectives. Mm-hmm. There will be a new book out in January by me. Ooh. On retrospectives.
It will be published
in the Mycone series.
Oh.
And we're currently just on the finishing line on this topic. So I hope it will be done soon so that we can publish in January. So this is currently the plan.
Fantastic.
So I'm really looking forward to that because I'm also a big believer and I love doing retrospectives, working with people.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided it would be a good idea to also publish a book on this topic. And because I think the standard book on this topic is still from Esther Derby and Dinah Larson. It's already, I think, 10 or 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was about time to write something new on this topic.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I'd definitely pick up a copy.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward. I wrote a similar book in German already a few years ago, and mm-hmm. people were asking, come on, would be awesome to get something similar in English. So for you English listeners, there will be something coming up soon. Cool. We are already close to the end of this short interview. It was just, time was running, right? It was just going like,
yeah.
I don't know. 30 minutes are down the road. So if you just have to tell our listeners one thing maybe or two things you would like to give them, how they can improve the way they're building teams or how to create more passionate teams, this is your chance now.
Yeah, I would say really try to tap into the get to know people. Tap into their interests. What motivates them? We're motivated by different things. You know, have one-on-ones, talk in groups, be open to enabling people to grow maybe into a different role or into a different squad, into a different team, or to working on something else. Like really try to tap in the interests and needs of the people and really support them to help them grow into the directions that they want. And it's the sweet spot when you find the direction that the person wants to go when it's in step with the direction the company wants to go. So I think through having close relationships, we can make this happen.
Thank you very much for these final words. And thank you for really getting up this early in the morning, even if you like to get up in the morning earlier. But still, I think it's a pleasure that you were on this podcast, having you in this podcast. And I wish you a great rest of the day. So this day here in Germany is ending. Yours is starting now. So I wish you a great week. And yeah, I hope to see you soon somewhere.
Thanks, Mark. I'm looking forward to meeting you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you and bye.
Bye-bye.